Wild Precious Life is brought to you in part by Visible Voice Books in Tremont, Ohio. With a glass of wine or a cup of joe in hand, readers can explore a curated selection of new and secondhand books. Learn more or shop online at visiblevoicebooks.com. And we're brought to you by the Territeer Club, a holistic online community helping parents raise kids who will care for the earth and change the world. Find resources, free activities, and a supportive team to help take the guesswork out of parenting at theterrateerclub.com. So I got my first perm when I was 13. I wore purple and blue eyeshadow, sprayed my bangs with Aquanet, and pegged my jeans. And tricked my grandmother into buying me a Benetton sweater. And I snuck out. And I snuck in. Basically, I did whatever I could to fit in with the crowd. In college, I went to parties and bars where the music was too loud, but nobody danced. I drank Bartles and James and Zima and later hard cider and pretended to have a good time. I wish I could pinpoint when all that stopped. I wish I could remember the day I finally gave myself permission to quit pretending so much, to stop tripping and stumbling along with some crowd that didn't even see me, and just be comfortable in my own skin. I suspect there was not one single moment, and like anything, it was a continuum, a slow slip of days and then weeks, where I learned to say yes to what served me and no to what didn't. I'm not always grateful for what it means to be getting older. I don't love the creaks and pops in my knees or the bald patch forming along the part in my hair, but one of my favorite things about being grown up is that I've learned to embrace my quirks. Now I see my individuality is a superpower. The stuff that makes me different is what makes me cool. And I suspect that's the case for most of us. I thought about all this during my lovely talk today with Carrie Harris, who writes licensed books, including Marvel novels, and her own weird and wild stuff. Carrie likes monsters, superheroes, and things that explode in slow motion. She's a full-time author who lives in New York with her ninja doctor husband and three teenage children. Carrie Harris, welcome to Wild Precious Life.
Thanks for having me.
So how long has it been since you and I have seen each other? I'm one of those people who thinks that the 90s were like 10, maybe 15 years ago.
Yeah, I was telling someone that I was going to do this the other day, and they were like, how long has it been? And I went, 30 years.
Yeah, I'm told my math is off, even possibly on that number. I suspect one of the last times we saw each other was either in Mrs. Link's or Mrs. Elric's English classes, or maybe backstage at a play or a musical where, like, you were in charge of everything and I was, like, the fourth chorus person on the left. But I was also missing my entrance because I had to get my spiral perm right, and it was hard to do without being able to flip up a collar on a jeans jacket, which we weren't allowed to wear. Anyways, I feel like we have a lot to catch up on.
Yeah, it was a tragic time, so there's plenty to talk about.
Also, since then, we've both been busy, but I think you've been busier because I wrote a book, go me, but I think you've written more than 20. So I think you and I need to talk a little bit about time management and, I don't know, word jujitsu or how exactly it is you tap into the prolific muse. But we always start with the same question around here. So do you mind just telling us your story?
Yeah. You know, I was thinking about this because I listened to the podcast, and so I knew you were going to ask me this. I do. I stalk you. It's okay, though.
Right back at you.
Right. So I think it all goes back to Mrs. Elric's class. I had her for freshman English. And for those of you who have not had the pleasure of knowing Mrs. Elric, she looked like the angry teacher from Central Casting. Like, like she always had angry mouth. She just always looked mad. And I had floated through school. Everything was easy. And I wrote my first paper for her and she gave me an F. I had never gotten an F before. I handled it very well by crying in public.
Excellent.
Yep. And then I got mad and I revenge wrote the next paper and she read it in front of the class and she said, "You should be a writer."
Oh.
And I went, "Oh, okay." You know, but you know, we came from a small Ohio town. We didn't know any writers. That's not something you do. And, you know, I spent a lot of my high school career trying to fit in. You know, I would go home and I would read comic books, but that wasn't cool. So you kind of hid that stuff and you tried to fit in. And then my early 20s and 30s were the same thing. I would watch reality TV and try to talk to the people at my workplace because that's what they did. They did not care about superheroes and hobbits and Star Wars and all the things that I was into. And it wasn't until after my kids were born that I said, you know, I gotta quit trying to be somebody I'm not, because how can I tell them to be genuine and be true to yourself when I'm not? And, you know, it started out slow. I wore my comic book t-shirts to school bus pickup. I became the weird mom. And after we had our twins, my husband and I decided I would try this writing thing because I'd worked desk jobs. I'd worked in labs. And, you know, I thought, well, I'll try to write a book. And if I don't get published by the time they're all in school full time, then I'll go back to work. And so that was in 2006. And I haven't gone back to work.
Wow.
So part of the number of books that I've written has to do with the fact that I've been at it for a long time. My first book came out in 2011. So I think it's like 23 books in 11 years.
That is amazing. Many gold stars. So that's fantastic. In an interview you gave, it could be a year ago or it could be 10. COVID has made years seem marshmallowy to me. But
time
you mentioned
has no meaning.
Yeah. You mentioned a story that stuck with me. It was about playing Star Wars in your neighborhood and how the boys were always, you know, Han Solo and Luke Skywalker, and there's really just the one girl, right?
Right.
And you don't get to do anything. Would you mind telling your version of this story if you remember it?
Oh, yeah, I definitely remember it because we played a lot of Star Wars. And it was just like you said, the guys would be Han and Luke and Chewbacca and R2 and Darth Vader. And then Princess Leia got captured. And so I would sit in my cell, which was the patch of grass outside my front door. And I could not leave the grass. That was my cell. And I would sit there. And the guys would go off and they would have lightsaber battles and whatnot and completely forget about the princess they were supposed to rescue. And I got tired of waiting. And so I would rescue myself. And then they would tell me, "You can't do that." And my question is, why not?
Rescue yourself.
Why can't the princess rescue herself? And so almost all of my books have female main characters or one of many main characters. You know, at least some of them are female. And I want to write books about princesses who rescue themselves, but who aren't perfect, because that's another problem entirely, right? You know, we have these unrealistic expectations where you have to be beautiful and smart and motivated and a perfect parent and your car is never messy and all of these things, which I am not. But I want to read a book that helps me realize that when the chips are down, I've got this.
Yeah. I love that about your writing, and that's the kind of book that I want to read too. And I want to raise, I've got three kids, two daughters. I want to raise all of them to know that they can rescue themselves.
Right. Yeah. It shouldn't be just women, but I think my experience as a girl who was taught to wait, and that there's one girl, so you got to fight for your spot. I don't want to do that. I want it to be both of us.
Yeah, we had this strange upbringing. Again, we're the same age. We were, on the one hand, told we could be anything we wanted to do. We could be anything we wanted to be. But the reality was that in our high school, our girls' leaders club, you know what we did in the girls' leaders club?
I never went to that.
We decorated the football players' lockers. That was our leadership. We also sold tickets to the basketball games. And this is not me knocking the club. I'm just saying that was our school leadership to serve, to bring, put candy in the football players' lockers. Girls our age were not always groomed to be purveyors of much of anything, let alone monsters and mayhem and murder. How did you find your way into that subject matter?
I've always loved speculative fiction. So that's anything that has something fantastic in it. Fantasy, science fiction, any horror book where it's an alien or a monster or whatever. And during high school, my home life was not good. And so spec fic was my escape. That was where I could go and hide. And one of the things that, you know, you get older and you kind of think about it, and I still love spec fic. And one of the things that I think I love about it the most is that it can be about things that are inhuman and unreal, and yet tell a story that is very human and very real. But you have that space, you know, and so for me, like reading your memoir, I could not do that. It's spectacular, but I've tried and I get too close, you know, and I have feelings and they take over when I should be trying to write well. I'm too busy having like an emotional moment. But with spec fic, I can say what I want to say because I have that distance. So it's still a very personal story, just in a completely different way.
Well, first off, I will totally read that memoir whenever you quit making these excuses and write it. So we'll just put a pin in that until we'll bring you back on for that. But I know what you mean.
Oh, you just called me out.
it's on the show. We're just putting it right there, putting a pin in it. We'll be back to it. We had Laura Maylene Walter on, who wrote this debut novel, Body of Stars, about how women's bodies predicted the future. And it's exactly like you're talking about, right? You use this fantastical idea of the freckles rearranging on a woman's body, and then it becomes a vehicle to all kinds of truth that's incredibly recognizable and real. And I love that on the one hand, yes, your stories are fantastical, right? In the one I'm reading right now, there are witches and there's a ghost rider, but there are people with difficult family lives, right?
Yeah.
There are people who are unburdening themselves or making mistakes in their jobs because they are holding on to the story they're telling about themselves, about owning a tragedy that may or may not even be their fault. So these guys are riding motorcycles and doing magic, but the parts of the story that are most real to me are when I'm looking in a mirror. And I do not expect to see myself in superhero stories, but I do find myself there. I love the way you do that. Thank you for doing that writing.
Well, thank you for saying so. You know, it's one of those things where you get into this business, or I think even you pick up a book like this as a reader and you think, there's no way this can be a personal story. You know, the book that you're talking about has Ghost Rider in it. Ghost Rider has has been in a million comics. He's been in movies played by Nicolas Cage. There's a whole lot of history there. So how do you make that personal? And not every story needs to be personal. Sometimes you just want to see a flaming skeleton on a bike ride around and be a badass. But I think for me, the things that are most interesting are, how do you deal with a curse like that? You know, he was a person just like anybody else before this happened. How do you come to terms with the fact that this is your life now? And what do you do with that?
Yeah, I don't think Nicolas Cage fully captured the full picture.
Slightly different portrayal. Yeah.
He Nicolas Caged the shit out of that role, but I think we missed maybe some of the nuance.
Yes. maximum Nick Cage in that movie. You are absolutely right.
I perceive the comic industry as a pretty male-dominated space. Am I perceiving that correctly?
Oh, yeah.
What's that like?
You know, this isn't my first time being in a male-dominated industry. Before this, a lot of my writing was in games, which is also very, very dudely. And, you know, 95% of it is great. People want to hear what you've got to say. You create connections with people who love the same things that you do and that are passionate about them. And you can, you know, you can talk about what you're working on and talk about what you're reading and have great conversations about it. There are moments where it's not so great, where you're passed over for things that you know that you are more than qualified for. And maybe there's a whole bunch of reasons for them. You know, it's kind of hard to say exactly why, but it happens so many times that you kind of start to wonder. And I think that's one of the biggest struggles with that kind of thing, is you have to have peace with not necessarily knowing why the answer is no. And being stubborn enough that you're going to keep going until you get your yes. And it doesn't really matter how long it takes, because I'm not quitting.
Yeah, you might have to keep rescuing yourself.
That's right. Yeah, it's not a one and done.
It's good to remember. The game keeps going.
Greetings from Evergreen Podcasts. We're rolling out a listener survey, and we want to hear from you. The information in the survey will help us gather statistics and in turn make our shows more appealing to advertisers. I know most people don't like ads, but this is one of the only ways our shows make money and help keep their lights on. We promise it will only take a few minutes, but the impact on our podcasts will be tremendous. As a token of our appreciation, we'll randomly select one lucky participant each month to win an exclusive merchandise package from Evergreen Podcasts. Head to evergreenpodcast.com/listener survey to help a show and possibly get some free stuff for doing so. We can't thank you enough for the support. Now back to the show.
So you're perhaps best known these days as a writer of, like, capital M Marvel stories, like including a few, I'm just throwing out titles here, like Shadow Avengers, which is an X-Men book, Witches Unleashed, which I was just referring to, which features the Ghost Rider, of course, and three pretty kick-ass witches. Full disclosure, I was not a comic book reader as a kid. As a kid and a preteen, I was way too busy passing those V.C. Andrews and Sweet Valley High books around the classroom and, like, dog-earing the smutty pages and, like, making sure your friends saw that. So the subject matter might be different between those stories and these, but I wonder if the skill set required is at least a little bit similar, because what is it like to write a novel based on existing characters that other writers have also written?
Yeah. Well, you know, my early novels were original, and I started out writing teen books too. So it is, it's somewhat different, you know, in that you have to be really careful not to break canon. You know, canon is everything that came before, who the character is. And yes, you can, you know, make some choices that change the character. But those choices have to be approved because
so you can't have
you don't own
Spider-Man.
It.
Spider-Man can't marry Black Widow and like have the Hulk raise their babies.
Right. Unless you get approval, which I mean, I might like to read that. But everything that I write goes through a very extensive approval process. And, you know, as I've gotten older, I become more and more dedicated to outlining, which has served me well in the Marvel books because by the time I've submitted it to them, I've gone through about 5 or 6 outlines, and they get to be about 20 pages long. And so I've worked out all of the problems in the plot, and then I work out all the problems with the license, like, we don't want this character to go in that direction, or we're using this character for something else. We need you to switch gears and that kind of thing. So by the time I sit down to write the book, I've replotted it 5 or 6 times. So all the holes are closed. It's very easy to get to writing because they force you to do all that advance work. And I like it so much that I do that for all my books now.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
I only recently learned that phrase, retconning. It turns out I knew what retconning was, but I didn't know. You know, it was something like you're watching One Life to Live or General Hospital. And, well, I mean, do you ever get halfway through plotting one of your books and realize that somebody died, so you have to, like, General Hospital it and make it all a dream and bring back Roman, but as Roman's twin brother? Do you ever get to do that?
For Marvel, not so much. I have gotten halfway through plotting and went, oh, no, I can't do this. This is not going to work. But that's also the nice thing about writing in a universe that has a multiverse, so that there are all of these different universes and each one has a Spider-Man. And so you've got a little bit of room to play. So you can use that. But actually, I wrote a licensed book a few years ago called Sally Slick, and it didn't have a Bible. There's a thing called a story Bible, which like it tells you all the background and all the things you need to know. There was no Bible, and so I read what existed, but I missed the fact that she was from Nebraska, and I wrote a story that was very much dependent on the fact that she was outside Chicago.
Oh.
And we didn't discover it until it was done. The book was going to the printers. So I was like, I have to do something.
Nebraska so, high school.
Nebraska County.
Oh, there
She's
you
from
go.
Nebraska County, which does not exist, but.
Retcon.
Yeah.
It works. Close enough.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you write for one of the big dogs, right? Marvel, who's the star of this corporation, is clearly ascending in the movie realm. This sounds like a lot of people's dream writing job. So I'm curious about how that happened. Did you just run into an executive buyer at your favorite smoothie shop? Did you just call Marvel? Like, how does one get that job?
Yeah, well, it's my dream job, too. And so I have to go back a little bit. I sold my first books to Random House. And so I thought this was it. You know, I have made it. And, you know, it's going to be smooth sailing from here on out. And,
roller coaster that only goes up.
Yeah. Yeah. My roller coaster went down. And things did not go as I'd hoped. And, I found myself in a position where people that I really respected in the business were telling me my career was over. It was
liars.
Gone.
No.
And I couldn't sell anything. And trust me, I tried. I have so many trunked books that just did not sell. And so for a while I quit, you know, because that's what everybody's telling you to do. And then we get back to the rescuing yourself thing again, that I wasn't ready to quit. I still had stuff to say. And I wasn't going to let anybody tell me I can't. So I started to take any project anybody would give me and pay me for. I would write anything. And worked on my craft, and I climbed up, you know, like tooth and nail, bit by bit, because I was determined that the next time that the door opened, I was going to go through it. And so, I mean, I self-published a few things. I worked for tiny, tiny publishers. I did anything I could. And then I heard that somebody was doing books based on board games, a company called Aconyte. And I've worked in the gaming industry before, and I've written books.
Sure.
Seems kind of perfect.
Yeah.
So I auditioned, and they gave me a book. And the week that I signed with them, they inked a deal with Marvel. And I thought,
how great is that?
Yeah, this is it. And I wrote, you know, they didn't know me yet. I had spoken to this editor like 3 times. And I wrote her this email and I said, please, please, please let me pitch for Marvel. I don't care what I have to do. I will show up on your doorstep and cosplay if you let me do this. And I'm thinking, I really hope she doesn't say yes, because they're in England and I can't sew. So I was going to have to buy a costume, but I would have done it. I really would have done it. And she said, go ahead and pitch. And so when you pitch, you have to come up with 3 ideas that fit into continuity, that fit into this set of factors and criteria that they give you. And so I wrote my pitches. And
do you remember one of them?
Actually, one of them was the pitch for Liberty and Justice for All, which was my first Marvel book.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, they said yes.
So all those years of reading comic books and playing these games and feeling like, I don't know if I'm just like everybody else, then you get this moment, right? This same week when you're hired to write, you were hired to write a board game.
Yeah.
Right? And then instead you end up pitching Marvel.
Yeah.
Good for you, man. Good for you.
Yeah. And I think it's, you know, I don't think it would have been possible if I wasn't stubborn, but also, I think the fact that I'm trying to think of how to say this. The phrase that comes to mind is embracing your weird.
Works for me.
Like, I finally decided I wasn't going to be embarrassed about the things that I love. I wasn't going to try to be like everybody else. I am a weird mom who most of the time I have blue hair. Right now I'm lazy. I wear comic book t-shirts. I'm almost 50 years old. I don't care. It makes me happy.
I always call it dancing to the beat of my own elephant.
Yeah. I like that.
So who are some of your favorites, characters you've written or just characters in the universe who you admire, who you like?
Well, yeah, I admit that I engage in very deep fan service with my books. Like my first book featured, Sabretooth, who's one of my personal favorites. Why did I pick Sabretooth? Because I like him and I wanted to. And then Ghost Rider, I picked up my first Ghost Rider comic because he rode a bike. And on both sides of my family, my grandparents and my uncles were bikers. And I thought they would think it was cool.
Your grandparents were bikers?
My grandpa was a bike mechanic. And Yeah. And then I dedicated the book to my uncle, who was like my replacement dad. And he was a biker. He used to ride in parades and do all the formation, crazy formations with the funny hats. And I thought they would think it was cool.
That's great.
So, yeah. So I do have, and they're very personal stories. I mean, I think that's a reason why I picked Ghost Rider to tell a story about found family, because, you know, my uncle became my dad. You know, he called me his daughter, just lost him earlier, late last year.
Oh,
and,
sorry.
You know, the book tells a story about family that's lost and found, because that's what I was living when I wrote it.
First off, I'm sorry that we didn't know each other better in high school. Because
Me too. I
think about the people I've met since high school who I went to school with. I'm like, what the hell were we doing? You know what I was doing? Probably trying hard to fit in, just like everybody else. Everyone's all trying hard to fit in, and we don't realize we could have been watching Pride and Prejudice and zombies in somebody's basement. But
that
second,
could still happen.
I love the notion that you've used these. Carmen Maria Machado uses fairy tales to tell. She talks about like telling the untellable, or getting at the story a different way. You can't get at it straight on, so she uses the vehicle of fairy tale in order to tell that story that you maybe couldn't say. And I think that I'm hearing some of that same thing in the comics, that you're using these as a vehicle to tell some stories that you maybe haven't told straight on.
Well, and there's actually a history of that, you know, if you're not into comics, you might not know. You know, there's been a lot of talk over the years about the X-Men, and the X-Men are mutants, and people are afraid of them. People judge them just based on their mutant status. And that could be a parallel to a lot of things. And so to be a part of that has been really, it's not something I expected, but it's been one of my most favorite things about the whole deal.
And that's wonderful. I hadn't thought about it that way. Okay, so we always close with icebreakers. Since you listen to the show, I tried to put some in that maybe you haven't heard before. These are multiple choice. So dogs or cats?
Dogs. I have a crazy one.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What's your dog's name?
Florida Bart Fest. We call him Bart. It's from The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. I always wanted a dog named Florida Bart Fest, and my family loves me.
Bart. Excellent. Coffee or tea?
I mean, tea if I'm sick. I'm already hyper enough. The last thing I need is coffee.
Gotcha. Mountains or beach?
Beach.
Early bird or night owl?
I would like to be a night owl. I'm naturally a night owl, but I have children, so I'm forced to be one of those early people.
Why does school start so early?
Yeah.
That's something we still need to change. Loud or quiet?
Quiet. I'm actually one of those obnoxious people who needs it to be silent in order to work, and I just like the quiet.
Are you a risk taker, or are you the person who always knows where the Band-Aids are?
That's a good one. I am the Band-Aid person, except for my professional life. I will take all the risks, because what's the worst thing that's going to happen?
Let them tell you yes.
Yeah.
If you could time travel, would you rather go back in time or forward?
Ooh, I think I'd rather go back, because there's things that you can experience if you go back on a level that you couldn't just by reading it. And I don't plan on going anywhere for a while, so I'm going to get to see forward, at least some of it.
What's something quirky that folks don't know about you? I mean, we already covered the mad cow. Likes, loves, pet peeves?
Pet peeves, I'm probably not that quirky. I'm one of those people who can't stand to hear people eat.
Oh, chewing. Is it the...
Yeah.
I thought I was the only one.
Oh, no. It's a thing. It's called misophonia.
I hate that. I don't want to hear your food.
No, I don't. Mm-mm. No.
I didn't know we were allowed to say that out loud. It's bothered me for so many years, and I just assumed that people make noise while chewing, and they can't help it, but I hate it.
Oh, yeah. It's an awful thing. It should be outlawed.
Mm-hmm. Chew quietly, folks. quiet food. All right. What do you love about where you live?
So we moved from Utah, which is very, very overwhelmingly Mormon, to a neighborhood in New York that is Orthodox Jewish. And we did not know that we did this. We bought the house on Zoom.
On Zoom?
Because of the pandemic. Yeah. Yeah. We had not seen it in person. And they are some of the most welcoming, wonderful people in this neighborhood that I have ever met. They spend their Saturday Shabbats drinking in their driveways. And so we are now their mascots. They're non-Jewish mascots. They got us a shirt. I have a shirt that says that I'm a part of the club. And they just this morning dropped off a Passover gift basket so that we could celebrate too.
Aw, that's lovely.
The sweetest thing.
I didn't know that you were in New York now. That's excellent. You're much closer.
Yeah, yeah. We just moved last summer. So I'll be back to Ohio.
You're out of excuses now for coming to the reunions, man. When you're on the other side of the Mississippi, but now I'm gonna get a hook and hook you in. What's one of your go-to songs?
Well, kind of on the same, considering what we talked about, anytime I get a rejection, I play How Do You Like Me Now by The Heavy.
You have a rejection song. Good for you.
And that's my... Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I do. I play it really loud in the car while I'm going to pick up the kids from school.
And what's your favorite book or movie or both? Sometimes people need to answer a favorite book, a favorite movie.
Yeah, oh, yeah. One that I've read recently, which I really loved, was called The Rook by Daniel O'Malley. And I read it fairly regularly. It's about a woman who wakes up with no memory of who she is, and she's surrounded by dead people and wearing gloves, rubber gloves. And she doesn't know what has happened. And it's funny and it's profound. It's another one of those books that's about weird stuff, but ultimately it's about knowing yourself.
And say the name, it's
quite literally
like a chess piece. Yeah.
Chess piece.
All mm-hmm. right. We'll link to that. I have not read that one. That's excellent.
Oh, it's so good.
And favorite ice cream?
Chocolate peanut
right.
butter.
Excellent. We'll hang. Mm-hmm. And last one, if we were to take a picture of you really happy and doing something you love, what would we see?
I keep asking for my author photo to be this one in which I'm just laughing.
I've seen that one.
And I was laughing because I felt awkward and because like she was trying to tell me to, you know, lean an inch this way and turn your head this. And I felt so ridiculous that I was laughing despite the fact that I was uncomfortable.
I think that's a beautiful picture.
And I think that it's all about being real.
I love that.
I'm tired of
bacon. Well, you send me that one and we'll use it for this because I've seen that. That's beautiful.
Okay.
All right, Carrie Harris, thank you. Or Carrie Fisher, what did you want to go by? No, we'll go with Carrie Harris. Carrie Harris, thank you for coming on the show today. Thank you for reminding us to trailblaze and not to take no for an answer and to rescue ourselves. And reminding us that monsters and zombies can be friends on the page who lead us to the truth in our stories that maybe we're afraid to admit. Folks, our guest today has been Carrie Harris. She's the author of so many books, I could not list them. But the most recent ones are, I think, Shadow Avengers, Witches Unleashed, and is Elder Dance Squad? That's pretty recent, right?
Elder God Dance Squad, yeah.
Okay, so guys, she has books that are comic books that they're comic book based, but there also are books that are just like fun, campy, teen zombie. I can't really explain them except that they're just good fun. We will link to as many of them as I can find on the show notes page. And to everyone listening, we are wishing you love and light wherever this day takes you. Be good to yourselves and to one another, and we'll see you again soon on this wild and precious journey. Wild Precious Life is a production of Evergreen Podcasts. Special thanks to executive producers Gerardo Orlando and Michael D'Aloia, producer Sarah Wilgroup, and audio engineer Ian Douglas. Be sure to subscribe and follow us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Allison Holland, host of the Kennedy Dynasty podcast. Equipped with a microphone and a long-term fascination of the Kennedy family, I am joined by an incredible cast of experts, friends, and guests to take you on a fun, relaxed, yet informative journey through history and pop culture. From book references to fashion to philanthropy to our modern expectations of the presidency itself, you'll see that there is so much more to Kennedy than just JFK or conspiracy theories. Join me for the Kennedy Dynasty podcast.